Welcome to Money Reverse with Carolyn M. Williams, Christian Biblical Principles for Our Personal Handling of Money and Possessions.
In continuing the United States Fiscal Cliff Simple Explanations, the question on the floor. What are the specific items that would affect our personal budgets in January 2013 if no tax relief extension measures are taken? One of those items is the Bush tax cuts. Before I jump deeply into this, I'd like for you to travel in time with me. Let's go back to January 2001. The blockbuster movie releases included Mission Impossible 2 with Tom Cruise and Gladiator with Russell Crowe. Among the music chart toppers were Faith Hill's Breathe, Donnell Jones' You Know What's Up, and Destiny's Child, Say My Name. Say my name, say my name. Take a few minutes and click the links here and you can enjoy the videos from these 12-year-old favorites. The national average price for a gallon of gasoline was $1.46, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average was dipping a bit after we had seen numbers in the 1990s and 2000s that were much higher. The dot-com boom and other technology frenzy items had been responsible for the soaring stock market in the late 90s, but now in January 2001, some of the quick start technology companies were going bankrupt, and that was causing a downward spiral throughout the technology sector. The Federal Reserve had started a correction for the soaring dot-com economy of the 90s by raising interest rates in the year 2000, and that always slows the economy down a bit. Actually, between June 1999 and May 2000, the Fed had risen interest rates 6 times. Many speculate that this was a key factor in the financial markets being unstable. Now, that dot-com bubble burst that had been anticipated, it did take place, and the direct result, we saw a crash in the NASDAQ in March 2000. The NASDAQ is the stock market that has a strong technology sector makeup. Believe it or not, at that time, we were in a position to have a federal tax surplus. Our taxes were high and our national debt was low at $5.7 trillion. At the time of this writing, our national debt is above $16.4 trillion. It was projected that our government would quickly pay off this national debt, and we would end up in a situation where we had more income from taxes than was needed to pay our bills. This is a condition that you never want to be in when you are a not-for-profit entity like our federal government. We had just elected Texas Governor George W. Bush as our 43rd U.S. president. One of the president's top campaign promises was that there would be a tax reform that would lower taxes for the American people, and that was one of the first things that he began working on after taking office on January 20th of 2001. As a result, there were 2 pieces of legislation passed. The first, the Economic Growth and Tax Relief Reconciliation Act of 2001 passed. And that was signed into law on June 7th of 2001. Also, the Jobs and Growth Tax Relief Reconciliation Act of 2003 was signed into law. And that happened on May 28th, 2003. These 2 legislative acts are hardly ever referenced separately because as we go further, you'll see they are so closely tied together. Together, they are known as the Bush tax cuts. You also hear these referenced as the Bush era tax cuts. Together, they comprise a broad, sweeping set of tax law changes that meant lower taxes for individuals and businesses within the United States. The initial proposal for the Economic Growth and Tax Relief Reconciliation Act of 2001, initially known as the EGTRA for short, was to implement these tax law changes permanently. Now, that was met with some resistance, and there was a lot of speculation that the required number of passing legislative votes would not be able to be reached. It was then changed to a Reconciliation Act, and it required it to include some sunset dates for many of the provisions, and it took advantage of requiring a lower number of votes, and it had a limited debate time. The bill passed with a 10-year time of implementation, which means it was scheduled to expire on December 31st of 2010. Now, let's look at the year 2003. After 2001, our national financial state was a bit more grim. Some of the things we were dealing with was still the fallout from the dot-com bubble burst. After that, we had the September 11th terrorist attacks, and we were feeling the pains of the collapse of several major corporations like Enron, MCI WorldCom, and Nortel, after investigations confirmed that there were unfair accounting practices within those establishments. The Jobs and Growth Tax Relief Act of 2003 was signed into law to, again, introduce some additional tax relief measures to individuals and businesses within the U.S., and that was a measure to stabilize and improve the state of families and economies in America. As we get into the details, the following three questions will be answered. Number one, what is in the Economic Growth and Tax Relief Reconciliation Act of 2001? Number two, what is in the Jobs and Growth Tax Relief Reconciliation Act of 2003? And question three, did the American Taxpayer Relief Act of 2012, also known as the Fiscal Cliff Deal, change any of these legislated items? Please note that what I share with you here is by no means a complete content of the above-listed legislative acts. There is a lot of detail there, a lot of confusing detail in my opinion. Now, you can get additional information from any of these items by referencing the actual laws online. I've included the links to the Federal Archives for each of these items at the end of this blog post. Now, in reference to the Economic Growth and Tax Relief Reconciliation Act, this law introduced the significant changes to our Internal Revenue Code that's been the focus of a lot of the conversations over the last few months. There were many, many items in this act. Now, I will outline them here, and then I'll go into more detail for those that are most applicable to most of us. And I've noted those with an asterisk. Noted with an asterisk, Title I, Individual Income Tax Rate Reductions. Noted with an asterisk, Title II, Tax Benefits Related to Children, Child Tax Credits. Noted with an asterisk, Title III, Marriage Penalty Relief. Title IV, Affordable Education Provisions. Title V, Estate, Gift, and Generation Skipping Transfer Tax Provisions. Noted with an asterisk, Title VI, Pension and Individual Retirement Arrangement Provisions. Noted with an asterisk, Title VII, Alternative Minimum Tax, Increase in the AMT exemption. Title VIII, Other Provisions. Because the Jobs and Growth Tax Relief Reconciliation Act of 2003 was so closely tied to the Economic Growth and Tax Relief Reconciliation Act, I'll note the adjustments introduced in the 2003 Act in line with the 2001 explanation so we can see the whole picture for each of these changes. Now, to avert the tax side of the fiscal cliff, an additional act, the American Taxpayer Relief Act of 2012. That's the ATRA. I'll reference it here as the Fiscal Cliff Deal. Was passed on January 1, 2013. Because the provisions of this legislation also reference these same Bush tax cuts, I'll include the effects of this 2012 Relief Act in my explanations as well. Now, one key item about the Fiscal Cliff Deal that's not related to the Bush tax codes. In 2013, all U.S. taxpayers will see less in our paychecks. This is because the ATRA did not extend the 2012 payroll tax holiday. As a result, our old age, survival, and disability insurance tax rates return to 6.2%. We had been enjoying a reduced rate of 4.2% as a result of the 2010 Tax Relief Act. We will see this tax increase on our paychecks as an increase in FICA effective in January 2013. The first title, Individual Income Tax Rate Reductions. This was a direct reduction in our federal tax obligations. We saw this when we completed our annual income tax return each year beginning in 2001. For us, when we reference the tax table as a part of completing our annual returns, the amount of tax that we owed for our income level was lowered and reflected in that tax table. These reductions were originally scheduled to be gradually phased in over a period of 6 years, from 2001 to 2006. Here's a chart that shows the reduction percentages and the original scheduled time of implementation. A new 10% tax bracket was created, and the 15% tax bracket was modified to be effective for individuals with a higher income than before. Again, the rates were reduced for everyone, and there were no actions on our part required for us to realize these reductions. They were built right into the IRS tax tables. The 2003 Tax Relief Act accelerated us to the scheduled 2006 reduced rates in the year 2003. The Fiscal Cliff Deal permanently legislated these lower income tax rates for all taxpayers that have a taxable income lower than $400,000 a year. That's $450,000 for married taxpayers and $425,000 for head of households. The tax rate for these higher income tax levels is 39.6%. Title II, Child Tax Credits. The Child Tax Credit is one that is allowed for every qualified dependent child for families that make less than $130,000 annually. Note that a tax credit is an adjustment to your tax liability, and it makes it look as if you've already paid the tax. This is a little bit different than a deduction, because a deduction makes it look as if you don't owe the tax. The amount of this child tax credit was originally capped at $500 per child. The 2001 Tax Act introduced gradual increases to this $500 per child credit to $1,000 per child over the 2001 to 2010 time period. The 2003 Act, again, removed that phased-in approach and accelerated this $1,000 tax credit to be in effect for the year 2003 and beyond. Another item to be aware of is that this credit is reduced from the $1,000 per child amount for those higher income families that have adjusted gross incomes that exceed the following guidelines: $110,000 a year for joint filers, $75,000 a year for single filers, and $55,000 a year for married filing separately. The fiscal cliff deal permanently extended this $1,000 child tax credit. Title 3, Marriage Penalty Relief. Before this act was signed into law, the amount of the IRS standard deduction for an individual tax filer was less if that individual was married. This means that if an individual is married, by law, they owe more tax than a single person. To break this down simply, if I'm single and I make $100 of income for the year, and the allowable amount of money that's my standard deduction is $5, then my taxable income is $95, and I will owe the IRS tax on that $95. In the same example, if I'm married, the allowable amount that I and my spouse can claim as a standard deduction if we file individually is $3, making our taxable income $97 on that same $100 of income. Both my spouse and I are penalized just for being married. The tax change here was to make the amount of the standard deduction be the same for an individual regardless of their tax filing status. If married individuals chose to file jointly, the deduction is 2 times the amount of the individual deduction, so that again, there's no difference in the tax liability whether you're single or married. These marriage penalty relief adjustments were originally planned to be phased in beginning in the year 2005. The 2003 Tax Act, in an effort to stimulate the slowing economy, accelerated these changes to be in full effect that year. The Tax Relief Act of 2010 extended these marriage relief adjustments so that they would be in effect throughout the 2012 tax year. The fiscal cliff deal made this marriage penalty tax relief permanent. Title 4, Affordable Education Provisions. In the 2001 Tax Relief Act, there are many changes in addition made to our taxing structure in the name of affordable education. There is a huge section on this. I'm not going to detail any of these here. Honestly, this topic could warrant its own separate blog post. But if you have a close tie to education, meaning if you are a student or have children that are students, if you're a teacher or have plans to set aside funds for future education needs for your family, take some time to look at the changes that were implemented. Again, these are in effect right now. The fiscal cliff deal extended and made permanent a number of tax incentives designed to promote education. This deal even resumed retired education tax incentives. Again, take the time to take a look at the tax codes associated with education to get the specifics. Title 6, Pension and Individual Retirement Arrangement Provisions. With the 2001 Tax Relief Act, a gradual increase in the amount of allowed contributions to IRA accounts was set to motion. This increased the previous $2,000 maximum contribution amount to a $5,000 maximum contribution amount. This limit increase was scheduled to be implemented gradually over the 2002 to 2008 time span, with $1,000 contribution increases every 2 years. There were also many good changes made that improved the handling of retirement funds, including making these funds more portable. Because these changes were not temporary and would not be changed as a result of fiscal cliff negotiations, I'm not going to focus on those items here. The fiscal cliff deal further improved retirement savings opportunities. Participants with 401k plans that have Roth conversion options can now make conversions to Roth at any time instead of being restricted by age or qualifying life events. Now, while this improves our retirement account handling flexibility, when converting to a Roth account, the tax is due at the time of that conversion. Thus, this generates tax revenue. So, of course, we can initiate a Roth conversion anytime we'd like to do that. I'm sure the government has no problem with us doing that. Title 7, Alternative Minimum Tax, or AMT. This is a big one. Back in the day, the AMT was known as the flat tax. This taxing structure was typically applied to the upper middle class households with a large number of deductions. It was designed to prevent large deductions and tax shelters from lowering the tax liability in a way that would enable individuals to legitimately not be liable to what is considered a, quote, reasonable amount of tax. Here's an example that may make this more simple to understand. Let's say that each tax deduction that you have is a coupon, like the ones that you get in that pouch of coupons weekly in the mail. Now, your tax deductions include your personal exemption, dependent children, medical expenses, mortgage interest deduction, and things of that nature. Assume that for each one of those, it's like a coupon. Now, like with any coupon, when you're ready to buy what's advertised, you take those with you. When you do that, to prevent you from having so many coupons that you end up getting the item or service for free, your coupon may be limited to only allow a single coupon per visit. It may be invalid when presented with other coupons, so forth and so on. What the business that created the coupon is attempting to do is to prevent you from paying less than what they deemed as a minimum price for that service or product being sold. If you have a lot of coupons, you will only be allowed to have a discount up to a certain amount. Bottom line is you will have to pay something for that product or service, no matter how many coupons you present. The AMT uses this same logic when it comes to our federal income tax liability. If you have many children, have a high dollar mortgage, which gives you a large mortgage interest deduction, and you give generously to many charities, without the AMT in place, it could be possible that you could have a very low or zero tax liability. Taking the AMT into account, the tax that you will have to pay will be the higher of either your calculated tax with deductions or the AMT or flat tax for your taxable income level. If you fall into the category of having to pay taxes under the AMT guidelines, to calculate your taxable income, instead of applying those deductions that I mentioned earlier, as you would if you were using the standard IRS tax tables, your adjusted income will be reduced by a single amount called the AMT exemption, and that is key to this whole taxing structure. Once that happens, the 26% and 28% AMT tax rate is applied to this AMT taxable income. The AMZ exemption amount was increased as a part of the 2001 Tax Relief Act, and this higher deduction pushed millions of families outside of the boundaries of having to pay the AMT, which is a higher than normal tax rate. The fiscal cliff deal increased the AMT exemption amount for the year 2012. Allowances for inflation adjustments were implemented for the years after 2012. This, again, prevented over 60 million taxpayers from being subject to the AMT rates for the returns that are about to be filed for the 2012 tax year. This is a permanent tax relief item. We made it to the end. Whew! That is a lot of information. Note that this is one of the five components of the fiscal cliff. I challenge you to verify your source of this information, which is yours truly. And while doing that, learn more about the specifics of these financial matters that are real to each of us. You can do that by referencing the actual legislation in the Federal Archives and the IRS tax code supporting documents by using the following links. Stay tuned for information on other fiscal cliff topics. Was this helpful in any way? Are there items that turned out to be more confusing than helpful? Let me know through your comments.
You have been listening to Money Reverse with Carolyn M. Williams. For more information, please visit our website at www.moneyreverse.net.